This WBEZ podcast is supported by Invisible Wounds Foundation, committed to healing military members living with brain injuries suffered in service. Thousands of service members are living with traumatic and devastating brain injuries that we can't see. Join the mission by texting DUTY to 53555 to give, or learn more at invisiblewounds.org. Rise and Shy, WBEZ is serving local stories for breakfast every weekday morning from 5 to 11. Tune in on the WBEZ app to hear what Chicago's talking about as you start your day.
We are signing an executive order aimed at reining in this out-of-control administration. The order establishes ICE-free zones. That means that city property and unwilling private businesses will no longer serve as staging grounds for these raids.
Hey, Chicago, it's Sasha Ann Simons, and this is In the Loop. Stick around for a breakdown of the latest local news of the day. But first, neighborhoods across the city, well, they're still on edge. They're watching for any signs of continuing immigration enforcement from ICE, DHS, and Border Patrol. You might remember back in early October when Mayor Brandon Johnson signed that executive order declaring that all city property was off limits to federal immigration enforcement, and he created what he called ICE-free zones. And since then, a wave of nearby suburbs and municipalities have followed Chicago's lead. So in this next conversation, we're going to hear from political leaders around the region about why they're taking a stand and how these local moves are reshaping the conversation around immigration enforcement in the Midwest. At the table, we had Tony Preckwinkle, Cook County Board President, Daniel Biss, who's mayor of Evanston, and Tom McDermott Jr., mayor of Hammond, Indiana. I'm going to start with you, Mayor McDermott. Talk about immigration enforcement and what it's looking like right now in Hammond.
It's almost the same as what you described in Chicago. It seems like you hear about it every once in a while, but it seems like they went away a few weeks ago. But obviously, we were paying attention to Chicago. Being, you know, I could ride my bike to Chicago from City Hall, so we were paying attention to, you know, what was going on in Chicago. And when it eventually resulted in Hammond, we were ready for it, thankfully. Mm-hmm. And watching how the Chicago leaders were handling the situation certainly helped. By the way,
absolutely. What did it look like from your viewpoint, President Preckwinkle?
Well, I talk to my constituents and say that the federal government declared war on us. Operation Midway Blitz, it sounds like a military operation. And, you know, they're kidnapping people off our streets and sending them to horrible detention centers and gulags in foreign countries without any due process. So it's an assault on us and our neighbors. And we have tried, as the mayor, McDermott, said, to discourage them in whatever ways were available to us. I issued an executive order in October as well, saying that they couldn't be on our property. They couldn't be in our buildings. They couldn't be in our facilities, in our parking lots.
Right.
We can't keep them off our streets, but we did everything we could to prohibit them from using county facilities for their operations.
Why make that move, the executive order?
To keep them from, to be complicit in any way with the terrible, horrible, disgraceful, unconstitutional things that they were doing. And, you know, I think this is a moment in which we have a moral obligation to stand up for our neighbors. And I'm grateful to so many Chicagoans who have lifted their voice in this moment, mm-hmm. have been out at Broadview protesting, have been in the marches, who have communicated their belief that this is wrong, this is an abomination, and that we need to do everything in our power to fight back. You know, we can't just allow the federal government to snatch up our neighbors and say nothing. You know, we have to fight. And I tell everybody it's immigrants at this moment, but we're on the list. All of us are on the list, whether it's black folks, whether it's Democrats, whether it's members of the LGBTQ community. We're all on that list. And we need to stand up for each other in this moment.
We should all be paying attention. Yeah, very good message. Mayor Biss, what has this looked like in Evanston? Evanston's been busy when it comes to ICE activity.
It's been terrible. And as President Preckwinkle said, there was just a series of times where they were driving around town, men in masks and with weapons and camouflage, literally grabbing people off the street because of the color of their skin, looking for landscape workers to racially profile and abduct. And then it got even more violent, where not only are they going after people who they allegedly think might be here illegally, they're also going after dissenters, beating up protesters, attacking people who are exercising their First Amendment rights. And so our community is terrified. Our community has been brutalized. People are, in many cases, scared to leave the house or losing income. Mm-hmm. Children are frightened to walk to school. Some of their parents are unable to safely take them to school. And the one thing I want to add to the comments that were already made is, yes, I completely agree. It is critical for us to stand up for our values and our beliefs and say that this is wrong. And also, what we're doing is making an impact. You can't always see it, but what we have witnessed as more people have stood up, as mm-hmm. more governments have taken action, as more rapid response has come into existence, is it slowed down these outrageous yeah. attacks.
So the community banding together, that seems to be working. How about the ice-free zone idea? Is that working out, or are there challenges?
Well, so far it's working great in the sense that they haven't tried to violate that.
Okay.
The hard part is going to be what happens if ICE tries to violate it, because yeah. we're not going to put ourselves in a firefight between Evanston police and federal agents. Instead, we're going to go to the courts. And we believe that we are on very strong legal footing, but we're fortunate that that hasn't been tested yet, because obviously what we want is them not to be in our town, not for us to all be in court together.
Yeah. How's it working out in Hammond?
It's different for us in Indiana because, you know, over in Illinois, you have a supportive governor, a supportive attorney general in
Amen.
Indiana.
Amen.
You That's do. Right. And thankfully, I wish that was the case in Indiana, and it's not.
So things are different for you working in a red state.
Yes.
He has a much tougher challenge, let's be honest about this.
So tell me more about
that. There's going to be repercussions, in my opinion, to the stance I took in Indiana. Whereas, and I'm applauded by the community.
Yeah.
My bosses are happy, but the governor, the attorney general, they're eyeballing us right now.
So is enforcement harder for you? Tell me more about the specific challenges.
I'm proud that we took the stance we did. We did a similar stance to what the president was talking about, what the mayor was talking about. We said, hey, you know, there's a federal courthouse in Hammond. You should use that federal courthouse for staging operations. ICE is literally two blocks away from a federal courthouse, and they're in the Hammond Police Department parking lot assembling, getting ready to go around and terrorize our citizens. And I said, hey, thankfully, I had talked to the police department the day before, and we kicked him out. We said, you can't do that here. Go to the federal courthouse. Thank you, Madam President. I appreciate that.
Madam President is applauding.
But there's going to be repercussions for me. Whereas in Illinois, you have a supportive governor and attorney general. In Indiana, we do not. And I'm just waiting for the axe to fall, and it will.
And I just want to say, we need to commend Governor McDermott and the people who have stood up under much more difficult circumstances than we face here in Illinois. So I just want to applaud him.
Thank you, man.
And the people who are with him.
I appreciate it.
In Indiana. It's a very difficult environment to be as courageous as he's been. Mm-hmm.
And the flip side of that is that the good fortune we have here is that we're able to collaborate across layers of government. We know in the city that when we call the county, the president's going to stand with us. When we call the state, the governor and the attorney general will. And in this situation where you do everything and it's still not quite enough, it's critical to have that level of collaboration.
Yeah. Rapid Response 47, that's the official White House Rapid Response social account, it posted on X reacting to Mayor Johnson's order back in October, the ice-free zones executive order. And they said, quote, "This is sick. He's aiding and abetting criminal illegal immigrant killers, rapists, traffickers, and gangbangers." Meanwhile, according to a Department of Justice document, 97% of people swept up by the raids here in Chicago had no criminal record at the time of their arrest. What does that signal to you, Mayor?
This is just outright racism. I mean, and as Mayor Biss said, you know, they're picking people up on the basis of their color and the language they speak and the occupation that they're in.
Absolutely.
Right? And the Supreme Court has allowed this. Let me understand. Let us all understand this. So the Supreme Court has said this is okay. I never thought I'd get to this moment in our country.
Yeah. And I want to add something because this is really critical.
Sure.
Right? As they drive around Evanston or Hammond or Little Village, the people of Evanston and Hammond and Little Village know what they're doing. But that Twitter feed or that X feed you talked about, it's national.
Yeah.
And so what they are trying to do is to lie to the country. They are telling people who are not here and don't see what's going on that they're going after the worst of the worst.
Yeah.
While what they're actually doing here is literally targeting people based on the color of their skin, mm-hmm. the language they speak, and the job they're doing.
So they're sending out a narrative across mm-hmm. the country.
It's propaganda.
Right. It is propaganda.
It is. It is.
It's gaslighting.
It's it's the kind of thing we saw in the 1930s from fascists and Nazis.
Mm. My wife and I didn't mean to interrupt you, Sasha. My wife and I had a wonderful weekend in Chicago about a month and a half ago. We spent just the best weekend here. And as soon as we got home, there was a tweet by President Trump that basically said Chicago's a hellhole. And it's just, it doesn't jive with what we're seeing. We all live here and we know he's lying, but there's people across the country that probably believe that.
So we know that the aggressive enforcement of much of it that we've seen here for the last several weeks in our area has now shifted to Charlotte, right? And Raleigh. So first of all, how do you feel about that? Watching that play out in now another city, and what are your tips for leaders there?
You know, what's interesting is I think that we're all learning from each other. You know, like I indicated earlier, I watched how Chicago leaders were reacting to ICE and it gave me a little step up. And I think that people in Charlotte are paying attention to how we reacted and you see the similar types of protests. And I think it's great.
Yeah.
You know, I talked to some of the advocates folks who are really engaged in the protests, and they said that they have been in contact with people they know in Charlotte. So they're trying to share with them what we've learned in trying to deal with this assault, so that they will hopefully be better prepared and have some idea about how they might respond in Charlotte. But you know what they're doing is attacking blue states, blue cities, and blue states, and using the interactions that happen as a result of these assaults on us as part of this national propaganda effort to demonize us, demonize all of us, particularly. And you have to remember, this is somebody who ran for president saying that every Mexican who crossed the border basically was a murderer and rapist. That's the narrative that he started with in terms of immigration. That's where he's been for a very long time, right? So the idea that they're pretending now that the people they're sweeping up off the streets are all rapists and murderers is just part of his longstanding narrative about immigration, and particularly about Mexican-American
immigrants. And I want to clarify a stat that I mentioned earlier. 97% of people without legal status here in Chicago who were swept up during these raids had no criminal record at the time of arrest. But you mentioned, President Preckwinkle, you know, about what we've learned. What have we learned here in Illinois? I mean, has seeing this aggressive immigration enforcement in Cook County, has it maybe shifted the way that you view your role and your responsibilities in making the county safe?
Well, I just want to say, to Mayor Biss's point, I think it's really important that people stood up, that we didn't just let this happen in our neighborhoods. I was at a school on the north side last week, and many of the students, well, some of the students, because it wasn't an entirely Latino school, were Latino. And the whole school community, parents, teachers, neighbors, volunteers, kind of embraced the school. And people are out when people are coming and going from school with whistles to let people know if they see any ICE presence in the community. Volunteers walk kids home if their parents are afraid to leave the house. The whole community has embraced the school and the students there to protect them as much as we can from these ICE assaults. So what we've learned is we have to work together. We have to stand up and speak. We have to do whatever we can, wherever we are, to fight back. And sometimes it's protests. Sometimes it's embracing the school, as I talked about. Sometimes it's action in the courts. Yeah. We've got to use every method at our disposal to fight them.
And what we've also learned, some specific tactics that worked, and our job is to communicate those to our friends in North Carolina as effectively as possible. Mm-hmm. I had an op-ed in the Charlotte paper on Sunday,
yes,
kind of enumerating some tactics, and I've had a lot of outreach since then. I have a Zoom with leaders from Charlotte later today, and I know that rapid responders from the Chicago area are actually flying to Charlotte to help coach folks on some basic tactics, because what we have learned is that you really can slow these guys down. And when you slow these guys down, you stop another abduction from happening.
You wrote a message to your residents in Evanston a month ago, you said, you know, but city and state government can't solve these problems alone. It's up to all of us to step up for our neighbors. Still feel that way?
I feel like the partnership between activists, organizers, neighbors, and government together, arm in arm, is what works the best. We can pass as many laws as we can and then go to court to enforce them. We also need neighbors looking out for neighbors. This school thing that the president mentioned is critical.
Yes.
The way that our communities have come together to make sure that children can get to and from school safely. Let's pause for a second. I mean, I feel this tension in my body now. I'm talking about neighbors coming together to make it safe for children to go to and from school, safe from their federal government.
It sounds unbelievable.
It sounds unbelievable.
Like a script from a movie.
And yet here we are.
A very bad movie, yes. And here we are.
So, Mayor McDermott, what have you learned about bringing constituents together who, in some cases, may not necessarily agree ideologically?
That's where I was going to go with. I think we've learned as a community the repercussions of not voting or voting against your interests. There's a significant number of people in my city that voted for this administration, not thinking that this type of thing would happen or them losing benefits that they'd relied on and still supporting this administration. And there's repercussions to putting the wrong person in charge. And that's one of the things that...
Do you think that they get that?
I think they get it now. When we're basically a war zone, when you see soldiers snatching up citizens, yeah.
What do you hear them say?
It's interesting because there's a lot of people that you know that they support the Trump administration, and then they're also screaming the loudest when they're losing benefits or they're losing freedoms. And that's one of the things I think that we're learning as a country is there are repercussions if you vote the wrong way. And I think that's going to benefit all of us. You know, the Democratic Party in next year's elections. Mm-hmm. I think there's going to be a blue wave. I really do.
As President Obama is always saying, elections have consequences.
Yes, yeah. Absolutely, President.
I want to underscore something we mentioned here and note that federal immigration enforcement is still going on in Illinois and Indiana, folks. Federal authorities have not completely left just yet. But as we know, Border Patrol Chief Greg Bivino and many agents are gone. They're currently operating, as I mentioned earlier, in Charlotte, North Carolina.
There's one interesting point that I'm sure you all ran into as well, is there's other parts of the federal government that we support, FBI, DEA, ATF. And the interesting part of this whole anti-ICE thing is anytime you have a legitimate DEA warrant that they're executing, everybody just automatically assumes it's ICE now. And I'm sure it's making their job much harder than it was before. For instance, this morning in Hammond City Hall, a bunch of DEA agents were gathering to execute a warrant. And we support the DEA. Obviously,
just today?
Absolutely. But there's a number of citizens that automatically see that and they think ICE is doing it again. And it's an interesting repercussion of all this.
Mayor Biss, I want to talk with you for a moment because you talked with a woman and she was detained by Border Patrol on Halloween. Her name's Jennifer Moriarty. What else can you share about her story?
It's the most chilling and extraordinary thing. So she so what happened that day in Evanston was the Border Patrol agent apparently slammed on their brakes deliberately to cause an accident and then pulled the woman who was driving that car out of the car and began assaulting her, put her in their car, and then a couple other people who were gathering to criticize them got grabbed and attacked, really assaulted brutally. You might have seen some of the videos of a young man being just punched in the head,
yes,
with his head on the ground while he was immobilized. Anyway, Jennifer was one of the three people who they took, and she talked about a few just totally crazy things, in addition to the absurdity of the whole situation, which is itself shocking. She talked about how they drove the people who they had taken around, and when they eventually brought them to the FBI downtown, they said, well, you know, you're not arrested, you're free to go. And she said, well, what does it mean not arrested? You abducted me, you handcuffed me, you put me in a law enforcement vehicle against my will, you mm-hmm. deprived me of my liberty, you drove me to a different place and then just turned me loose 15 miles from home and didn't arrest me. What
was the point
of
that?
What is this country coming to?
Let's actually hear from Jennifer, because I took a bit from your YouTube channel where you posted that interview.
They are absolutely afraid of communities that are organized. Every time the horns started blowing or whistles started blowing and people recognized them, you could see the level of anxiety and rage kind of take over them. And they just didn't understand that our community is not going to put up with it. Neither is Chicago. Everybody here is organized. That is what they were afraid of. They were afraid of a community armed with whistles and cell phones. And they were pointing guns and mace at these people. There was not a single individual in the community that was violent at all. It was all by these agents.
So again, we hear another example of community members coming together. President Preckwinkle, I wonder what more leaders can do to organize with the community. And I'm also curious, are there things you can't do in the face of immigration enforcement?
We can't keep them out of our cities or our counties. We just have to fight them when they're here. And to the point, you know, the fact that the community comes out and blows whistles mm-hmm. and people yell back at them and people try to protect the folks who are being kidnapped off our streets, I think is not only empowering, but as Mayor Biss has suggested, has the impact of having them pull back a little bit.
So it causes a little intimidation, you think?
Well, when you're faced with people who have guns and you don't, I wouldn't say that we're that the nonviolent people are intimidating.
But it sends a message.
It does send them. The message is we're not going to tolerate this. Even if you have guns, even if you are tear gassing us, even if you're spraying us with pepper mm-hmm. spray, you know, we're not going away. We're not going to stop protesting. We're going to continue to try to call you account for this bad behavior.
And I just want to add, I know I keep saying this, but I think it's really important because people can feel demoralized. People can feel like, well, we have whistles and they have guns, so what's the point? And that interview with Jennifer Moriarty, she was in the car and witnessed how every time they turned a corner and someone blew a whistle and a crowd gathered, they would turn away and look for a spot where they could be unwatched.
Oh,
what does
okay.
that mean?
Unobserved.
It means this stuff slows them down, and slowing them down is protecting people.
It makes them think twice, at least.
Well, if they are spending half their time running away from people with whistles, that's the time they're not spending abducting somebody else.
Yeah, kidnapping people.
Mm. Mayor McDermott, how are you thinking about collaboration right now with other city leaders?
Could I address, well, first off, this is collaboration. I love sitting here and listening to the mayor and the president speak about how they have a lot more experience in this than I do. But, you know, President Preckwinkle just said something that's important is, and she said a lot of important things, but she said unobserved. And that's one thing that I also noticed is Hammond police officers have body cams mm-hmm. and none of these federal agents, and you'd expect a lot more from a federal police officer, are wearing body cams and they're covering their face. It's insane. This is 2025 and they're not wearing body cams from the federal government. I mean, if they had body cams, I know I have police officers that aren't always on their best behavior. And when we put body cams on them, suddenly they got a lot more polite, you know? And I think if you put body cams on these federal agents, they may act a lot differently because everything they do is going to be viewed.
What have you learned from your constituents, Mayor Biss?
Well, I've learned about resilience. Our community has come together in a way I've literally never seen before. We're an active community. We're an engaged community. This is a different level. People are coming out of the woodwork, some to do the rapid response work with the whistles and the honking and the informing the community. Some are doing extraordinary mutual aid work, finding food and other needs, other goods that people to meet needs that people have. There's just a level of commitment to standing up together and keeping people safe that I think is really painting a picture of the kind of society we're trying to build.
President Preckwinkle, what do you want Cook County residents to know from you, your commitment moving forward, just in the face of this? I mean, again, the big guys are gone, but this is still very much a reality here in our region.
Yes, as you pointed out, the overwhelming force may be gone, but they're still here doing this disgusting activity. And so we need to continue to be vigilant. We can't let our guard down. As the mayor has said, we need to continue to keep our whistles on us. We need to continue to speak up to protect our friends and neighbors in whatever way we can, to call attention to the bad acts. You know, these are like paramilitary organizations in our community sanctioned by the federal government. Actually, they're federal employees. And so we need to continue to be on alert and continue to support and protect each other in every way we can.
Are you, Mayor McDermott, thinking about any other potential changes that you can make to your leadership style, if necessary, as you face the second Trump term in the state of Indiana?
I'm willing to do what it takes to protect my community. And I'm willing to go out on a limb if necessary. And I'm glad I'm here. And I'm glad I'm listening to these two great leaders and how they approach this situation. And I plan to take a lot of this back home. But I think in times like this, 20 years from now, when we all look back on this, I want to make sure I'm on the right side of history. And I know I'm on the right side of history. And we're going to be embarrassed about 2025, 20 years from now, when we look back on this.
I'm glad you said that out loud.
We are. We're going to be embarrassed about this. And I know when my grandkids are reading about this era of history, they're going to look back and wonder where Grandpa McDermott was on this issue. And they're going to be proud of me because I'm on the right side of history.
Yeah, I'm a history teacher. And I always say history is not going to be kind to America in this moment.
Cook County Board President Tony Preckwinkle, Evanston Mayor Daniel Biss, and Hammond, Indiana Mayor Tom McDermott Jr. Thank you all so much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks very much, Sasha.
This WBEZ podcast is supported by the Crown Family School of Social Work, Policy, and Practice at the University of Chicago, offering a master's program in social work that combines rigorous coursework with field experience. The integrated curriculum develops analytical, leadership, and policy skills essential for effective practice. Applications are open for the early deadline of December 1st at crownschool.uchicago.edu. Inspire change. Shape the future.
Okay, now to break down what Chicago is talking about. At the table was WBEZ Morning Edition anchor Claire Lane and WBEZ reporter and weekend anchor Michael Puente. Claire kicked things off with an announcement from Illinois Secretary of State Alexi Janulius. Here's Claire.
Illinois residents can now officially, as of today, some of us anyway, present a digital version of our driver's licenses or state IDs at certain places.
Okay. So you said some of us. So who can actually use this right now?
Meaning the Apple folks. So iPhone users and Apple Watch users for now.
So I'm on the list.
You're on the list. Janulia says the program will be expanding to Google and Samsung wallets for Android users. A timeline isn't clear yet.
So this is not to be confused with all that Real ID conversation we recently had with Janulius, right?
So essentially what it is you're just taking a photo of your ID and having it on your phone in digital form. So if that's your Real ID, that's your Real ID.
Okay. So where can you use the digital driver's license?
Many businesses and other entities, including Transportation Security Administration agents. So that's TSA at the city's airports. Also, 250 other places nationwide will be equipped essentially to accept and scan these digital IDs.
Yeah, that's definitely convenient.
Yeah.
So when's this all effective?
7 a.m. this morning. So we're two hours into this. Under the law passed last year by the Illinois General Assembly with authorize these digital IDs, residents will continue, we should note, Sasha, to have physical IDs as well.
Mm-hmm.
Mobile ones can serve as ID, as we talked about, but businesses aren't necessarily required to accept them. Residents will also be required to carry physical IDs when you're driving. So this won't suffice, you know, if a cop pulls you over, you can't just pull out your phone. Law enforcement not required to accept the digital IDs either.
Got it. Let's shift to immigration enforcement just a bit here, Mike. What is the latest out of Broadview, the West Suburban facility?
Well, the latest out of Broadview, there was a hearing yesterday before U.S. District Judge Robert Gettleman. As you know, there's a lawsuit pertaining to the conditions inside Broadview. There have been hundreds of people held there, many without bedding, without proper food, just filthy conditions. Well, there was a status update yesterday where it was learned that there are only, as of yesterday, four people now being held in Broadview. So
that's
what
it.
That's it right now.
At one point, we had, 150 plus folks stuffed inside that center.
Each cell in that center.
Wow.
So it has gone down. It's kind of still unsure as to why. The government isn't really saying. There was a tour of the facility by attorneys for the plaintiffs and for the federal government.
Right.
And supposedly there is food now being provided to the detainees. There is bedding. It's still kind of unclear how clean it is.
Right.
So there's still a lot of unanswered questions.
I'm also still wondering just about those four, right? To go from, you know, roughly 150 people down to four, it begs the question, what do we know about these four? Do we know anything about them with information being so scant?
Well, one of the parties in the lawsuit, it's a class action lawsuit, is the ACLU of Illinois. So they have a list of everyone who has been in there. But like for the public, it's not like getting arrested with the Chicago Police Department where you can go to the police department, find out who was arrested, why, and what charges. You can't do that here. So the public still remains in the dark. Who are these people? What are their backgrounds? What are their histories? It's still very unclear, the backgrounds of these people.
So you talked to Samuel Cole, who's an attorney with the ACLU of Illinois. He's one of the key lawyers, part of this lawsuit that you're talking about, alleging the inhumane conditions. Let's hear from him.
It's entirely clear that Broadview is not a place where criminals are being brought. Broadview is a place where people are being brought entirely regardless of whether they had any criminal history or not. And the vast majority simply do not. We don't know if there are less people being arrested, if people are being detained somewhere else locally, if people are more quickly being moved outside of Illinois to be detained. We don't have good information about which of those is happening.
Sasha, I should add that Samuel Cole is a former longtime immigration court judge who recently retired.
Mm-hmm.
So he has a clear understanding what happens in immigration court.
But also, like you mentioned, no idea who these people are who still remain.
That's correct.
Claire, let's talk about Governor Pritzker for a moment, because he did something pretty big. He met with the Pope.
Yeah, he was in Rome.
Right.
JB met with Pope Leo XIV at the Vatican this week. He's getting around. I posted photos of this meeting on Instagram.
Yes, I saw that.
Right, calling the Chicago-born pontiff a son of Illinois. MK was also there, First Lady MK Pritzker. They presented Pope Leo with some gifts, some local gifts, including art from incarcerated women at Logan Correctional Facility.
Wow.
And Burning Bush Brewery's beer. This is De Pope American Mild Ale. They gave him a couple
out
of
the
six
red
packs.
Carpet.
The governor hasn't said why he's in Rome, but he's on social media shaking hands.
Oh, there's something afoot. I can tell. What else are you watching, Claire?
Well, we spoke about this yesterday, Sasha, about a woman who was set on fire on a CTA Blue Line train Monday night. So there is a person of interest in custody regarding this.
Wow.
We don't know at this point if this person is the culprit. The Sun-Times reports that CTA video captured a possible attacker. All we know is this person has scruffy facial hair. They were seen leaving the train. And according to a dispatcher, we don't even know yet if this is the person in custody, but they are continuing to investigate this very bizarre incident aboard the Blue Line.
Yeah, that was shocking.
Watch your back.
Yeah. Mike, President Trump is unleashing anger towards state Senate Republicans in Indiana. What is going on?
Well, what's going on right now is the number one soap opera that should be on Netflix
now,
How the Hoosier State Turns. It's really a drama. So you got you have President Trump, who is really pressuring Republicans in Indiana to redistrict. Right now, there doesn't seem support for it. You got the president of the Senate, Roderick Bray, saying, there's not a vote in the Senate, so we are not going to meet for a special session. We're going to come back in January, and by then, it'll be too late. But it's not over. So you've got now the governor, Mike Braun, who continues to support Donald Trump in everything he says and does, and is pressuring the House to come back and the Senate. You got Roger, Todd Houston in the House, Indiana House, who's saying, we are going to come back. We are going to meet. We have the votes. But it's still unclear if they have the votes. Now, you got to remember, you know, 7 of the 9 congressional seats in Indiana are already occupied by Republicans. You only have 2, including District 1, which includes Northwest Indiana, which has never been represented by a Republican in 100 years of that district.
Mm-hmm.
So they're trying to expand it enough to, I guess, sway it towards Republicans. But it's still unsure of that because the first district includes Lake County, Indiana, which is the second largest county in Indiana. And you can combine 10 other counties in Indiana. It still wouldn't add up to the population of Lake County.
Oh, wow.
So it's a huge gambit for Indiana, even if they go forward. But it doesn't appear that they have the votes. But it's, you know, President Trump.
Right. But you wonder if his, you know, is his wrath enough here to get these Senate Republicans to flip.
It may not be. You're still seeing the hemming and hawing, but I think Indiana's going to hold firm.
Oh boy, Trump has maybe an obsession with the Midwest. I don't know. I don't know what's going
That's
on
right.
there. All right, WBEZ's Michael Puente and Claire Lane.
This episode of In the Loop was produced by me, Micah Yasin, and edited by Ethan Schwab. Sasha Ann Simons is our host. For more in-depth coverage of news and culture in Chicago, be sure to subscribe to this podcast. For a full archive of the show, head over to wbez.org/in the loop. Thanks for listening.